Now, mourners gathered in Ireland earlier this week to pay their respects to singer and songwriter Sinead O'Connor, who died last month at age 56. That's Sinead O'Connor singing Nothing Compares to You, which topped the Billboard charts in 1990 and remains her biggest hit. The Irish singer had a successful career and an international fan base, but her music was often overshadowed by headline-grabbing controversies, like when she ripped a picture of Pope John Paul II on Saturday Night Live in 1992 to protest abuse in the Catholic Church. As with many artists, Sinead O'Connor leaves behind a complicated legacy, but it's one that's important to talk about and remember, according to our guest today, a music journalist who wrote a book about O'Connor, published earlier this year, just weeks before the singer's passing. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you listen to Sinead O'Connor? What does her music mean to you? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Allison McCabe is a music journalist and author of Why Sinead O'Connor Matters. Allison, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks so much for having me on the show, and thanks to the listeners for joining us.
You were clearly very invested in Sinead O'Connor's life and writing this book. A lot of personal connections there. I want to start off by asking, how did the news of her passing hit you?
Shock. I mean, you know, I was very, very shocked because although, she's had many hardships, she was coming back into the public eye. If anybody out there watches the show Outlander, she did the theme music. She was working on a new album. She was back on social media on the platform formerly known as Twitter. And, it really seemed like she was coming back as she has so many times before. So, yes, it was shocking and also gutting.
I want to talk about her music specifically a little bit, which often, you write, got overshadowed by various controversies. But you write this amazing story, like you see in the movies in some ways, of, hey, this kid's really talented, and somebody hears her and tells somebody else, and then all of a sudden she's an international superstar. There's this huge well of talent at the center of her story. Can you talk about that a little?
I mean, there really is. And I think that gets overlooked a little bit because, you know, a lot of people really only know a very limited number of things about her. You know, they know that her hair was shaved. She had a 1990 mega hit with Nothing Compares to You, which she started at the top of the program. And as you mentioned, 2 years later, she goes on Saturday Night Live and she destroyed a photograph of Pope John Paul II. And after that, she really, for a lot of people, except for people who are sort of super fans, she disappears from the world stage. And, you know, then all we hear from her really after that is nonstop tabloid headlines that have nothing to do with her music. That was really why I became interested in her story. I wanted to go back and figure out how that happened. And I reexamined her interviews and her public statements. But also, as you're talking about here, I went back to her music. And long after she stopped making chart hits, she made gorgeous, amazing music. She's done 10 studio albums in addition to compilations, live albums, songs for films and TV, charity appearances, and so on. She really did have this voice that it was, you know, whether you want to call it innate or use religious terms and call it God-given, her voice really had the power to express an emotional truth. And I think that's what people have responded to over all these years. And that was discovered early on when she was about 13 or 14. She was in a Catholic girls' reform school following her parents' divorce. Her mother had been very abusive to her in her childhood. But at that school, she met a kindly nun who saw that she had this need to express herself and bought her a guitar and arranged for lessons. And really sort of saw her for the first time. I mean, by that, really saw that she had this need, really, to have an emotional outlet, but also that she could maybe be that for other people. And that's what people saw over and over again. And that's why she was signed to her first recording contract when she was only in her teens.
I want to skip ahead to another album here. 1994, the album's Universal Mother. Here's a listen to the song, a song about the Irish famine.
Okay, I want to talk about Ireland. Specifically, I want to talk about the famine, about the fact that there never really was one. There was no famine. See, Irish people were only allowed to eat potatoes. All of the other food, meat, fish, vegetables, was shipped out of the country under armed guard to England while the Irish people starved.
Famine by Sinead O'Connor. And Allison, the president of Ireland was at Sinead O'Connor's funeral, a huge part of Irish culture. As you write, Sinead O'Connor wasn't a singer who happened to be from Ireland. There was something very central about her Irish identity. Can you talk about that and how it shaped her career?
Right. So from very early on, you know, she really wanted to be a protest singer. You know, Nothing Compares to You was kind of an outlier. You know, she saw herself in this great Irish tradition of sort of agitator artists. And then, you know, within the sort of rock music world, you know, her inspirations were really people like Bob Dylan or John Lennon or Bob Marley. The problem she faced was that as a young woman, you know, who this is in the 1980s when she signed her first recording contract, there's just not really an established lane for young female artists to do that. But the Irishness really does come through from the start, and it is a through line in her work. And actually, you know, you mentioned Universal Mother, which is one of my favorite of her albums. It's really not until after 1992, which she says re-railed rather than derailed her career, because it set her back on the path of making music with meaning, that she stopped suppressing her Irish accent. And she goes back to Ireland and she studies this method of singing called bel canto, which isn't about breathing or formal techniques. It's about really using your what's within you, you know, your experiences, your perspectives, your emotions to get to the fullest and truest sense of the music. And that also came out in songs like the one you just played.
Yeah, and I read that she went through that training. It seemed to me like she was already pretty good at doing that, right? Like expressing emotion and her experience through her voice came through pretty loud and clear on her first couple albums, right?
Yes, but she was actually encouraged by her label, you know, to suppress her Irish accent because the idea was that wasn't going to sell in America. And to be an international superstar, you had to sell in America. There are also two different album covers for that record, which, by the way, she's about 20 or 21, just about to turn 21 when that album comes out. She's produced that album by herself. They had another producer on there, and she felt that, you know, that wasn't really her creative vision. So she took over the production herself. But when it came time to release it, they did a photo shoot. And the original album cover, which was released in Europe, you can see this online, her mouth is open in song. And they said, oh, you know, you look too angry for American audiences. Let's try another shot. So that's the one we got, where she's looking downward with her arms crossed in front of her chest.
One thing that kept hitting me through the book is it seemed like Sinead O'Connor had her vision of why she made music, what she was doing, what it did for her, what she was trying to do for the audiences. And then there was this vision of what it meant to be a celebrity at that time, especially a woman celebrity at that time. And they just never meshed. They really, it seems like that was at the center of a lot of what ended up being controversy. Am I reading that right?
Well, absolutely. Because even before, you know, Saturday Night Live, you know, in 1990, this is when she has that big mega hit and this multi-platinum selling album, you know, she's being criticized for really many, many things. I mean, you know, there's an earlier appearance that she was supposed to do in 1990 on Saturday Night Live. And she found out that Andrew Dice Clay was going to host the episode. And both she and the cast member Nora Dunn both pulled out of the episode because they objected to his humor, which many consider to be misogynistic and homophobic. And they responded by having an opening skit where Nora Dunn is crushed to death by Sinead's falling amplifier, and Andrew Dice Clay calls her the bald chick. You know, that was 90. Also, a few months later, she's going to play a show in New Jersey at the Garden State Art Center. And it was the custom at that venue to play the national anthem before the show. Two people who were posing as reporters, they weren't actually reporters, sort of baited her by asking her about her feelings about whether or not it should be played. And she expressed her preference that it not be played because I think she was sort of unclear as to what that had to do with the, you know, rock music that she was going to be playing. And they ran with that to a local station. It got reported that she refused to play because she was anti-American and she was censoring the national anthem. So all these things happened before SNL. And when SNL happened, you got the sense that, you know, she'd done this thing that was shocking, but really people weren't necessarily talking about why she did it, which was to call attention to the child abuse crisis in the Catholic Church, which actually was real.
Talking to Allison McCabe, music journalist, author of the new book, Why Sinead O'Connor Matters. You can join in at 800-642-1234 if you'd like. What are your opinions on Sinead O'Connor? Were you watching all this happen back in the day? Have your feelings changed over the years? And do you just like listening to her music? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time.
Sing me a song of a last
That's Sinead O'Connor singing the Sky Boat song for the title credits of the TV show Outlander. Allison McCabe stays with us, author of the new book, Why Sinead O'Connor Matters. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Did Sinead O'Connor matter to you? What do you think is her legacy in music, in politics, in pop culture? Do you have questions for our guest about Sinead O'Connor's music, life, or activism? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@wpr.org. Allison, you write about Sinead O'Connor's lifelong struggle with the trauma you mentioned earlier, her abuse as a child. This comes back again and again, seeking therapy in various ways. And it seems, unfortunately, like she never, I don't know how she could, but it seemed like she never escaped that.
Yeah, I mean, again, after Saturday Night Live, she didn't disappear. She kept making music, but we weren't really listening. And she kept trying to talk about issues such as racism and sexism. And, you know, she was early on talking about HIV/AIDS awareness. She was talking about all kinds of social issues, but we were not really listening. And one of those issues, of course, was talking about her lifelong struggles with mental health. And again, we didn't listen. You know, many people wrote her off as crazy, and they used her candid disclosures to discredit or invalidate her. And I think that's really tragic.
Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Marcus is with us in Milwaukee. Marcus, hi.
Hi, Rob. So I was not a huge, I was born in 79. I grew up in the 80s and 90s. I was never a huge Sinead O'Connor fan. I went to a Catholic church. The priest there was fantastic. But given the totality of everything that has occurred in other portions of the Catholic church, I feel like she's been vindicated and that it's shown her actions, although some might have deemed them rather drastic, that she was calling very loudly attention to an issue which we're still grappling with today. And so I think she was really at the forefront of it. And so therefore, I have much respect for her.
Marcus, thanks a lot for that call. Allison, this is something people are talking a lot about, that Sinead O'Connor was right at the time with her protests against abuse and cover-ups of that abuse in the Catholic Church. It just took the rest of us a long time to catch up with her.
Well, you know, again, I think, you know, she didn't always say things perfectly, right? And the message didn't always land. And, you know, she didn't come on the show and say, hey, this is why I'm tearing the photograph, and explain it in very explicit terms. And I think a lot of people just didn't understand what she was trying to do at that moment. And you know, she loved the Catholic Church. You know, remember, when she goes to the school, even though the school was a harsh school, you know, that's where she found her voice. You know, it was the love of this nun, Sister Margaret, you know, who loved her, you know, gave her the love that her mother never gave her, you know, really was a figure like that for her. That's where she really, it's where everything sort of came together. So when she tore up that photograph, she did not mean at all to attack the faith. What she meant to do was call attention to the corruption and the hypocrisy of an institution that was protecting predators and silencing survivors. You know, about 10 years later, a series of articles comes out in the Boston Globe. And, you know, that is a sort of major turning point in the U.S. in terms of public opinion about what was going on. People were suddenly aware, this is real, this is happening. It's not isolated to a few cases, right? But it's global. And it's not, by the way, just the Catholic Church either. You know, people started to see that. And it was reporting. As a journalist, I respect that. I respect the meticulous reporting. But it was also the bravery of those survivors under intense pressure to remain silent, you know, and keep the shame inside, to say something anyhow, you know, to say something, to talk and to be heard. And that's where we start to see change.
Marcus, thanks for that call. And I saw, Allison, quotes from people attending Sinead O'Connor's funeral, some of them abuse survivors themselves, talking about what hearing Sinead O'Connor talk about abuse meant to them. This is something that even if everybody wasn't listening, some people it clearly reached.
It did. And you know, I think over the past, you know, year or 2 years already, this narrative was starting to shift. You know, we started to see this. Of course, you know, her memoir came out in 2021, and that's how I first connected with her. I had an advanced copy of that memoir. I pitched a story to NPR's Morning Edition, a profile about Sinead O'Connor, interviewed her for that. And really, I mean, I love making stories for radio, because what I get to do is I get to have the interview with the principal subject, in this case, Sinead O'Connor. I also brought in Outside Voices, a musician, a music critic. I got to put her music in there. I got to put some archival tape in there. I got to bring context to her story. But realistically, you have about 5 minutes to do that. It's like a miniature documentary. So I knew even at that time, there was a much bigger story, and that's why I wanted to write the book. So her memoir came out in 2021. And then in 2022, Catherine Ferguson made the documentary Nothing Compares. And then my book came out in May. So this narrative was beginning to shift, you know, already. And now it's really, I think, a positive thing that it's continuing to shift. I just wish that she could have experienced more of that love in her lifetime.
Allison McCabe is with us, author of the new book, Why Sinead O'Connor Matters. So we got another caller. Patrick is with us in Madison. Patrick, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What did you want to bring up?
I just wanted to bring up, sorry, I'm in the car. I just wanted to bring up, I interviewed Sinead O'Connor in 1988 in Detroit, Michigan. And that was her first time over in the States. And right away, we were a college radio station. And so we were always looking for artists that, you know, just had a certain voice, certain message. And I was just very impressed by her thoughts about things, her thoughts about the world and things in general. And, you know, for me, I think when she did what she did with the Pope on Saturday Night Live, for me, I was impressed that, you know, she was dealing with fame in a way that she wasn't aware of, and just the backlash of music, the music industry in general. You know, it just shows how relevant she was then and how relevant she is now.
Patrick, thanks for the call. Allison, what do you think?
Well, first of all, Patrick, thank you for seeing it early on. You know, I mean, she really, it was MTV and college and sort of alternative radio in its infancy. That's where she first came to the attention of people in the U.S. and people like Patrick, who saw it, you know, that this wasn't just an entertainer, this was an artist. And I think there's a big distinction. You know, what she showed us throughout her career as a musician, throughout her life, was that the real enemy was really our apathy and our indifference and our tendency to isolate and shame people who show us uncomfortable truths. You know, so I think now I don't think of her as a saint. I think of her as a human, as someone who, you know, she doesn't have to be perfect. None of us are perfect. But what set her apart was that she never gave up on the idea that the conversations she tried to spark were worth having.
Thanks for that call, Patrick. Let's listen to another piece from your favorite album, Universal Mother. This is from In This Heart.
This is my grief for you.
Allison, could you talk about that track a little?
You know, I was just listening to it. I mean, even though I've heard it so many times before, it's just so beautiful. It sort of stops you in your tracks. You know, I mean, I think thinking about it now in terms of her legacy, I think that the best way that we can honor that legacy is to, you know, understand, again, that this was a human, that this was an artist, and also that this was somebody who was, you know, committed to talking about issues, especially those that are most difficult for us. I mean, we don't have to agree, but building bridges is better than burning them, and listening is better than silencing.
I've been trying to think of artists that I put in a category with Sinead O'Connor, and my list is zero. Allison, she's such a unique voice. Do you categorize her with anyone else, or does nothing compare to her?
Yeah, I think that's come up a few times when people have talked about, you know, the title of that song. And is there anybody who compares to Sinead? I mean, she was a singular talent, but I do think she created many lanes for other artists. I'm thinking about, you know, some of the songs she was expressing pain and anger. And then you see that in artists who came after, like Hole, or, you know, you think about Alanis Morissette in a song like You Oughta Know. You know, she made that lane possible. You know, you're talking about artists who are again, you know, I think that there's a little bit of a double standard in the sense that male artists, it was okay to sort of have an activist orientation. But for female artists, he really made that possible in a way that wasn't possible before so much, right? I mean, people still encounter resistance and that double standard is still there, but she at least sort of charted the path in that sense. But I do think that there really is one Sinead O'Connor, and, you know, not, really nothing does compare.
And just our last few moments, I know the late 80s, early 90s were an abysmal time for to be a woman in the music business. Are things at least a little better because of her and what she went through?
I'd like to think so. I mean, I think they're different. You know, I think that artists today face all kinds of different challenges, regardless of their gender, you know, just because, she came up during what I would call monoculture, when everybody was watching, let's say, the Grammys, or everybody was watching Saturday Night Live all at the same time on television. You know, now we live in a kind of social media environment where things go by so quickly and things are so ephemeral. You know, whatever statement you're making creatively, politically, in any regard, it's harder to kind of have that stick because there's always the demand for the next, you know?
Allison, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us.
Well, thanks so much for having me.
That's Allison McCabe, music journalist, author of the book Why Sinead O'Connor Matters.